Well, there's a lot of work to do in the Northern Rivers as we think about how to move forward. And as we've opened our doors just last week, we really wanted to start with just showing a sense of what's possible based not on just some ideas we might have, but what other people in other places in the world who are facing similar sets of challenges. Every challenge is unique, but similar. And try to show some really successful things they've done to deal with their situation as a way to start to think bigger picture about the future, but also start to hopefully feel hopeful around what we might do, and that we're part of a global community of people with similar sets of experience. We're not on our own. And through the lab, we really also hope to be able to bring some of these folks into this space and actually work together.
You were there in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans.
Yes.
And you must have seen incredible need there, similar to the need, I guess, of Lismore after the floods this year.
Yeah, like anywhere, a lot of differences that were unique to that disaster in that place, but a lot of similarities as well. So I did experience that personally as a resident, and then professionally my work was very, very much involved in the recovery.
What were some of the similarities with how you were approaching the reimagining of Lismore?
This is obviously was equally devastating for people who went through this and lost everything, had incredibly traumatic experiences, brings up all kinds of issues that were related before the flood. The flood didn't distribute its chaos equally. You know, it really exploits the existing inequalities we have in our society, and that was a similarity as well. So where I think we find ourselves in a position where the inequalities in our society are magnified, and we have an opportunity now, hopefully, to really try to address some of those things. And I know that's a big part of what I was involved in post-Hurricane Katrina, and we'd like to bring into the work of the Living Lab. But also, after the first couple of years in New Orleans, it was getting less and less about responding to one particular disaster event, and more about opening our minds to a new way to just live in this place. Understanding that more hurricanes were going to come off the Gulf of Mexico, more disturbances were going to impact our life, and that a lot of the people that lived there still chose to live there above anywhere else in the world for a whole range of reasons that were all relevant and all good, and that's just what it was. So we all started to, you know, I'm oversimplifying it here, but a lot of people really started just working around, okay, well, how do we change the way we live here so that these disturbances don't cause the kind of physical and emotional and spiritual harm that they did for that catastrophic event.
Let's have a look around. We start here with the timeline of recorded flood events and La Nina periods from 1898 to 2022. Wow, that's a bit of time there. We've got 1887, the first Lismore Council chambers opened.
Yeah, this is just a pretty classic timeline, and as people enter the space, just to get a context of the 2022 floods. You know, I've spoken to so many people who've lived in Lismore all their lives, and they often talk about 2017, 1974, 1954. We've been through this, we've flooded, we're a flood town. And so there's so much local knowledge. And we found people come in and gather around this board and start telling stories and finding things. Now, obviously, this goes beyond, I don't think we have any of our residents that were around in 1898 when this starts. But we're really trying to show the coincidence of La Nina and flooding, meaning that there is a real association between those two. And anyone who comes into the space and looks, it's a pretty clear association.
Yeah, it looks like we're getting a lot more events from, say, 1950 to 2020.
Yeah, and I'm not going to speculate on the complexities of climate science. I mean, obviously, I fully acknowledge that we have to, you know, deal with climate change and human-induced climate change. But I'm also aware of not trying to oversimplify what's happened in the Richmond River catchment and, you know, at Lismore particularly around floods, because just the way we use the land and quite frankly have degraded and abused the land in the catchment is obviously a huge contributor to the increase in frequency in floods as shown by this map.
So land clearing allows for more water to just pour off the land rather than having the trees and vegetation there to hold it in place.
Yeah, I think that's a very simple way of looking at it and gets at the core concepts and how we pull ourselves out of this mess and, you know, maintain and continue to enhance our lives here. Mm-hmm. And think about a different way of doing things, I think, is one of the challenges we're facing and some of the conversations we hope to have in this space.
So you're a Lismore resident. You live in South Lismore, is that right?
I live in North Lismore.
Okay. Yeah. And you're also associated with the Southern Cross University,
yep.
Which is partnering with the University of Technology Sydney.
Our other critical third partner in this is the Northern Rivers Reconstruction Corporation, who really saw an opportunity to get the technical expertise and the creative thinking of the universities at work and really got behind our proposal to them that we needed a space for the local expertise that lives within the residents of the Northern Rivers to come and connect with some of the technical expertise and work together to flesh out some resident-driven strategies for the future so that it's not just the community sitting around waiting for another announcement out of the government as to what's going to happen, that this is a space, a generative space for resident-driven strategies. So the Living Lab is a program of the Northern Rivers Reconstruction Corporation, Southern Cross University and University of Technology Sydney.
So there's a lot of expertise in that little pool of knowledge there.
There's a lot of expertise and there's a lot of institutional capacity. And so we really do hope to have an impact here. And we do, like I said, if I have to distill down what we're doing, we're really creating a space where that critical local expertise comes and meets with that critical technical expertise, because in my limited experience, although I did work for a number of years in that post-disaster space in New Orleans, the only really successful projects were the ones where that local and technical expertise came together. And so that's what we want to do. So to your earlier question, yes, through the universities we can reach into the creative minds and energy of students and faculty working together, and that can be a really powerful resource and platform to take the first few steps on some ideas and to illustrate what the possibilities might be and to start deeper conversations about things not based on just an idea but based on a fairly significant amount of work and exploration that's already been done about an idea. They're really good for taking something that's been identified as something a group of people are interested in and taking it that next step. And so that's one of the things we can do and we will be doing here. And then sometimes we'll be working not so much with students, because sometimes we actually need to get right into a more serious investigation of some topics. So we are looking at how we're going to gather the support to fund some research. I like to call it applied research. It's not the kind of research that's just going to sit in an academic journal. As important as that generation of knowledge is, this is stuff that's meant to support actual projects and programs getting launched. And in the university network, not just at Southern Cross and at UTS, but extending across the academic sector in Australia and internationally, and we are working to build a network internationally of expertise. There's a lot of smart people that have done a lot of really impressive projects, and we want to get them involved here.
Dan Etheridge speaking with me there from the Living Lab in Lismore. Dan's a resident of North Lismore. He's also an alumni of the Southern Cross University, and he's an expert in the post-disaster space. We'll hear more from him in just a little while, but right now, this is So Now by Matthew Herbert. You're on BayFM 99.9 with me, Nelly. You kiss me hypnotized. have a look at some of the projects that you're highlighting around the room, you've got Indigenous projects, farming projects, you've got river projects, catchment, warnings, retreat, community. That's how you've kind of, I guess, siloed the ideas that you're exploring here.
Yeah, so like I said a bit earlier, these are just case studies, and we've tried to organise them into themes, partly to make sure we weren't just focusing on one thing too much over the other, that we were covering some ground. And in each case, we've got a location, the issue that was getting addressed in that location, the response, you know, the project that was conceived of and executed to address that issue, including the groups that worked on it. And so you learn a little bit, but importantly at the bottom we pose a question at each one that's meant to help people connect this particular experience and project to the Northern Rivers.
So for instance, under the community banner, you've got land and water management by consensus. It's a project from the Netherlands, and the question that you ask is, what types of cooperatives will support community resilience in the Northern Rivers? How does this spark that conversation? What is this project sort of, proposing to Lismore?
Well, the Dutch are famous for having to deal with being inundated.
It's true.
They have done, over centuries, they have modified their landscape to try to balance the benefits of living in their homelands with having permanent human settlements. And so they are also famous for their ability to work collectively and by consensus. And so what we're trying to showcase here is a particular area where they have a number of these community cooperative consensus models that connect community to governance, to policy, to decision making, so that they have pretty clear collective decision making structures. Something I think it's pretty clear to say we don't here.
We've seen a lot of system failure in this particular incident that Lismore has been grappling with for the last 10 months.
Yeah. Although I will say the Dutch are really good at seeing opportunities to learn from others, and I'm an optimist by nature, and I think we're going to be giving them some things to come and learn from us in the next 3 or 4 years. And in my experience in New Orleans, we look to the Dutch for leadership around engineering, particularly, and technical solutions of living below sea level. And they came out, and they were very generous with their knowledge and expertise. And they reminded us that they had actually been in New Orleans 60 years earlier, because New Orleans was considered the world leader at the time in urban stormwater management. And so they felt like it was their turn. And so again, that just kind of connects us, like, there's a lot of people with shared experience, and while successful solutions and strategies are always locally based, there's a lot of general principles and experiences that can be extremely valuable. So
over here, if we look to Hungary, under the farming segment, we have floodable agriculture in Tisza River in Hungary. So can you talk us through this? The question at the bottom is, how can farmland be adapted to support flood resilience?
So this more broadly, I'm not an expert in this particular project, but more broadly, this is exploring the concept of one piece of land that can serve multiple purposes. And in this case, sometimes it is used to store water when needed, and when it's not needed for that purpose, it's used for agriculture. And so that's trying to get past this notion of, well, if this is my farmland and you want to use it to store water, you're taking my farmland away. There's a middle path. And you know, I'm not standing here proposing that our farmers need to all of a sudden share all of their land for this, but there are examples where this has been done successfully and embraced by the agricultural sector in some of these applications, because there's all kinds of sort of revenue and cost offsetting mechanisms that go along with these physical interventions. So again, just a conversation starter. There's a lot more behind this project. There's another one right next to it from the Klamath River Basin in Northern California. That one's more about habitat preservation and restoration than it is about water storage during flood. Equally important issue, and one we're also dealing with here, but a similar strategy where, you know, over a long-term engagement and co-design period, the various public agencies worked with the farming community and came up with a strategy that was mutually beneficial and was able to achieve all of their goals.
What sort of responses have you had so far from the people of Lismore to these stories? I mean, I guess they wouldn't have known about them before they came in here to the Living Lab.
I've had nothing but positive responses, and I was a little concerned a couple of nights before we opened. You know, I live in North Lismore, and I've been lucky enough to have a house that, you know, happened to pull up pretty good after the flood, and my friends came and helped me clean it out. So I'm back in my home. But there are a lot of people facing much more, much less known pathways forward and don't have that stability. And so on the one hand, I was a little concerned people are going to be like, this is all great, but I can't even get back in my house yet. And thankfully, people said, some people came and said, I can't even get back in my house yet, but it's just so good to see some hope, to see some things where we're not just looking one step ahead, but this is something a bit bigger, and I'm starting to think about what's possible in this region now. It doesn't address people's immediate needs, and we would like to try to contribute to some of that as one of the first steps we take, providing some assistance as people navigate elevating their house or flood retrofitting if they're able to qualify through the Resilient Homes Initiative for some of those. You know, that's the kind of thing where we can see ourselves playing a role of getting them some expertise, helping them think through what do I need to know before I even call a builder to elevate my house? What should I be thinking through? These are all some of the more immediate things we can help people think about in addition to these bigger picture things.
So the lab will be open, what, every day? Or when can people come and access this information?
So the lab is serving multiple purposes, like some of these farmland projects we just talked about. It's the working office for myself and my small team. And so we'll be working out of here full time. We're open to the public Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday from 1 till 4. I hope to expand that next year as we are able to expand our team. But for now, that's our open hours. And look, if there's an organization out there that really wants to work with us, but they're based out of Lismore and they work another job and life's life and they can't get here, well, reach out to us and we'll meet you here at another time. You know, our doors are consistently open Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday afternoon, but we'll meet anyone here at another time.
And will you be having events through the period that you are here? Will you be having lecture series or anything like that to help get people focused on a particular event?
Yeah, we're still organising all of that, but actually on Thursday, December 8th, we're going to have our first event like that. And that's Professors Penny Allen and Martin Bryant, who put together the exhibit with their colleague Andrew Toland. Martin and Penny will be here giving a little talk about the research behind this, and they're going to go a little bit deeper into a couple of these examples and talk a little bit about what we haven't talked about is we're also showing some student work from a landscape architecture studio. They spent the whole of last semester thinking of creative strategies for Lismore. And so that'll be something where people can come and, you know, talk to the researchers behind this show, learn a little bit more about it.
And that's open to the public?
That's open to the public. So that'll be Thursday, December 8th from 5 till 7.
Fabulous. And do you have a website people can go and have a look at?
Not yet.
Not
it's
yet.
A work in progress.
This is a real face-to-face kind of experience here in a building that has actually been brought back to its former glory. I mean, there's so much optimism in this space.
I will say, the state government through the Reconstruction Corporation and Southern Cross Uni were both being fully behind this idea, co-generated this idea, really. But it's not the normal way of doing things. It's a little odd to get off campus or get out of the government offices and to have a program that needs to kind of stand alone a little bit to be able to do its job, but is really driven by these pretty established institutions. So a lot of credit has to be given to some of the people behind the scenes in thinking outside of their usual bureaucratic paradigms and thinking creatively to get this done. So a lot of energy went into that and not much into the website yet. So that is coming.
Watch this space. Dan Etheridge, thanks so much for taking us through the Living Lab in Lismore.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Dan Etheridge there. And as we heard, the Living Lab in Lismore is open to the public Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 1 to 4 p.m.